The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Hello and welcome to another Yes to Life show. I'm Robin Daly. And if you're a new listener, the Yes to Life show is, like the UK charity it's named after, all about integrative medicine for cancer. Nearly 2 years ago, I interviewed Dr. Slocum from the Chemothermia Clinic in Istanbul. At that time, they were beginning to show some striking results from their integrative approach. Well, things have moved on a lot since then, and their work has become much better known internationally. So I thought it was time to do another interview to get the latest update. I'm talking to Dr. Abdul Slocum over Skype in Istanbul. Hi Abdul, thanks very much for coming on the show today.
You're welcome, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
So it's almost 2 years since we last spoke on the Yes to Life show, and you were excited then at some of the early results from small trials, but I believe things have moved on considerably since then. Can you start the show with what you would consider Chemothermia's headline achievement to date, the one you're most proud of?
The thing that we're most proud of is that since the last 2 years, we started to be known more worldwide now, and being applying the metabolic theory in treating cancer patients. And we've also published a paper since then, also which was a good achievement, where we clearly explain where we come from and what we apply as treatment. So the last 2 years has been a fruitful 2 years for us in helping people fighting the worst of all diseases and most deadly of all diseases. And we're planning to also publish new papers this year. Hopefully we'll be doing well with that also, and sharing our outstanding results. So the last 2 years have been well, quite busy, which we're happy about, because what we're doing is special and also effective. So everything's going well on our side.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, so your work has caused quite a stir internationally. And in fact, you know, Chemothermia is discussed here in the UK pretty often. I understand that Ralph Moss, he's arguably the leading international investigator and writer on developments in integrative medicine. He travelled from the US to visit you and he went away impressed. You've definitely pushed the boundaries in some way. So what aspect of the work at the clinic has been the most innovative, do you think?
The mainly most innovative thing that we do is that we combine the genetic approach to cancer together with the Warburg theory to treating cancer. So it's a combination of these two theories that is the most outstanding of our approach. So we use conventional therapies as much as we can, and follow the recommended guidelines in our treatment, but what we do is also apply all science-based complementary therapies, and when these two weapons are combined, both treatment tolerance and quality of life is much better, also treatment outcomes are outstanding also. So this is the main difference of our approach, and because there are many worldwide clinics and very well-known clinics also, but the thing about other places are generally most of them are standard conventional protocols. The other ones are are lacking the conventional side and has most alternative therapies. Mm-hmm. But the difference of our approach is that we use both of these in an effective and combined way, which is the difference. And the difference is that we only don't apply complementary therapies, but what we do is we believe in the metabolic theory of cancer. So our treatment is actually a metabolic-based cancer treatment protocol.
Yes.
That's when we use this, this gives us outstanding results, results that cannot be expected with standard protocols.
Mm. It's very interesting to hear the way that you describe what you do. You don't describe it as integrating conventional medicine and complementary medicine so much as saying it's you're integrating two different theories of cancer, which is interesting because, of course, largely speaking, conventional medicine mm-hmm. is based around genetic theory and alternative medicine yes. is being based around metabolic theory. And so it's a different way of describing it, which is, but it's good to highlight mm-hmm. because you're actually saying that actually both these ways of looking at cancer have their strengths.
Definitely. Definitely. And when what we say is, and also and the leading publisher in this area, Professor Seyfried, in his book, which he also mentions and explains the metabolic theory clearly,
yes.
Genetic defects are downstream effects of the metabolic defect in these cancer cells. When we say this, we're already accepting that there are genetic defects in these cells.
Yes.
But in the standard conventional protocol, what's skipped is that these are downstream effects of the metabolic dysfunction and dysregulation in these cells.
Right.
So what we do is, in our protocol, we're targeting both the downstream effect, also the main effect, which is the metabolic dysregulation. And when these are targeted at the same time, results are outstanding.
Right. It's quite interesting, really. This is what you call a chicken and egg situation because, of course, orthodox Definitely. Medicine also acknowledges that there are metabolic differences, but they see that as a downstream effect of the genetic defects, don't they?
Yeah. So we see it from the other way around.
Right, so that's important because that is actually really a difference in the way that you're viewing orthodox treatments and their uses.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. So the movement towards integrative medicine, it generally tends to come from the complementary and alternative medicine side of the spectrum. But the problem with that kind of movement is the resistance of orthodox doctors to change. And, of course, you need to have them on board for true integration mm-hmm. to occur. And now, chemothermia was an initiative by orthodox doctors, and it seems yes. that these doctors have wholeheartedly embraced anything that complementary medicine has to offer that can improve orthodox medicine in any way. So this represents a real dive into integration that actually, as you pointed out, has only a few other parallels in the world. So can you talk a bit more about integration and why the combination of the two offerings can be so powerful?
Yes, this is an important point. Now, our starting point is that we accept that the war against cancer isn't being won.
Okay.
So, and also, as you mentioned, we're conventional physicians, and so we're an orthodox team, but the difference of our clinic is we're accepting that we started out with saying the war against cancer isn't being won. So if you're in a war that isn't being won, and if you want to win it, the question is, what can we use that's beneficial?
Right.
And when we look at these, we didn't come out with saying orthodox medicine or conventional medicine is bad.
Right.
What we said is, okay, we're using these, but they aren't beneficial enough. They aren't effective enough. How can we improve our outcomes? And then as we went on, we stumbled upon the Warburg theory of cancer and the metabolic dysregulation seen in these cells. And as we added these onto the protocol, the main aim in this was increasing efficacy. And the difference of this is that we aren't giving up the conventional side, but we're adding upon everything that can increase efficacy and outcome. And also while we're doing this, we're also increasing the efficacy of the conventional side also. Because the main thing is, in conventional protocols, one of the main issues is treatment tolerance. And patients aren't able to tolerate treatment much because the weapons that we're using are toxic weapons. Right. Meanwhile, in the complementary therapies, there are two main points in complementary therapies and the holistic approach. The holistic approach of treating diseases is based on increasing the healing force of the body. So we use these, and when we use these, what it gives us is you're much more able to use conventional medicine also, because the patient tolerates much better also. Because the organ function, the immune function of the patient is much better. And so you're able to use your conventional side more effective also. And so the main thing is that what we say is our starting point was, we're not winning the war against cancer. And the second thing was, why not use everything that can be beneficial, that is shown to be beneficial in scientific researches. And that's what we did. And what we saw was very surprising for us also. And we see that it works with many patients that normally you won't expect to even give any treatment because they're so advanced. But when this kind of approach is embraced, you're able to see outstanding results.
Amazing. Well, it just shows what can be achieved when you step outside the agenda, if you like, of orthodox medicine and of alternative medicine. They both have their agendas, but if you leave those behind,
definitely,
and you look at just what works, you know, what could help, then amazing things are possible.
Definitely.
Okay, well, so you've mentioned this a bit now. What's becoming clearer and clearer over time is the ability of some natural substances to make toxic treatments more tolerable and more effective. For many people, this is new territory because of the past tendency for people to line up behind either orthodox or alternative thinking. So can you explain a bit more about this synergy and give some good examples of the ways that you do this at Chemothermia?
Now, what we do is, firstly, as I said, we apply the conventional side. But the way we apply the conventional side is unique to us, which we may have named as metabolically supported chemotherapy.
Okay.
Now, first I'd like to explain that. What is metabolically supported chemotherapy? In metabolically supported chemotherapy, what we're offering is a new application method of chemotherapy. And this is a more advanced and enhanced version of the worldwide known insulin potentiated chemotherapy.
Okay.
But there are unique differences to it. And in this method, what we say is, firstly, the chemotherapeutic drugs that are used are, again, the same drugs that are recommended in guidelines. So the drug choice is the same as standard.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the main difference is the application method. So how is treatment applied? Treatment is applied based on the patient coming in to the clinic in a fasting state, which is a 14-hour fast. So when they come into the clinic in a fasting state, we check their blood glucose levels, and following that, based on their blood glucose level, we apply insulin, which is similar to insulin-potentiated treatment, because we also believe that insulin increases efficacy. But what does insulin do? The main thing that it does is, when you apply insulin to a fasting person, which already has lowered their blood glucose levels compared to a person that has just eaten,
mm-hmm.
When you apply insulin, it's a metabolic shock to the cancer cells because you're decreasing the blood glucose level even more. And then at a specific point, we apply our chemotherapeutic drugs in a and dextrose solutions, which increase the drug delivery to the to cancer cells that are under metabolic stress. Now, the main point here is, and the difference in of our clinic from other IPT centers is that the in other IPT centers, chemotherapeutic drug dosages are around 10% than normal dosages. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, and this is done on the presumption that chemotherapeutic efficacy increases with insulin. We agree on this. Meanwhile, most of these clinics that lower dosages to 10%, the main one of the main reason, besides insulin increasing efficacy, is that they aren't licensed in applying chemotherapy, one. And secondly, they aren't educated in dealing with chemotherapy-related side effects. What we while they lower the dose to this to a 10% dose, we lose our efficacy there. What we do is we apply chemotherapy in standard dose ranges. What is this? In every chemotherapy drug, there will be a recommended dose scale. It will say you can apply this drug in this diagnosis, and the recommended dose range is 60 milligrams meter squared to 100 milligrams meter squared. So the physician has a choice there of applying chemotherapy at a specific dose. And in a standard approach, generally, if the patient's quality of life is good, you'll tend to apply the highest dose possible. Meanwhile, what we do is because we're also applying complementary therapies, and that because we're applying treatment in an enhanced application method, we tend to apply treatment at the lower dose scale. So meanwhile, the important point here is that we're still in the standard dose range of chemotherapy, but compared to a standard approach, where you'll apply a much higher dose, we apply a lower dose, but that is still already in the guidelines. This application method and approach we name as metabolically supported chemotherapy, because it's based on applying chemotherapy while cancer cells are under a metabolic stress, because of the lowered blood glucose levels and the fasting that starts the day before.
Just check in on two things there. The stress that's being applied encourages, if I'm correct, the cancer cells to divide more rapidly. Is that right? And at that time, they're more vulnerable.
The main stress there is that you've cut their main energy source. Cut their glucose levels. That's the main stress that you're doing. When the patient starts fasting, this starts the stress on the cancer cells. And when you apply insulin just prior to applying chemotherapy, that's an acute high stress to the cancer cells. Mm-hmm. And after doing that, when you apply treatment at that time, it's a very vulnerable time. It's just like an approach to if you're leading a government, and you, like years ago, even now it can be done, but years ago when there were more man force was used in wars, when you're before attacking a place, you'll first aim to cut their energy source, their food. So this is a similar approach that we're embracing.
Yeah,
we starve them.
Right,
and then apply treatment when at that time.
Yeah, okay. And the other question is that you said it's delivered with dextrose, and this is to encourage the take up of the chemotherapy. Is that right? Because Because it's mixed in with dextrose, it's looked at as food.
Yes, definitely.
Right. Okay, good. Great. So I just wanted to clarify those. So to carry on.
Yeah, yeah. That's metabolic supported chemotherapy is one of the main part of our treatment protocol.
Mm.
And secondly, what we extensively use is hyperthermia.
Okay.
Local hyperthermia and whole body hyperthermia. Why is hyperthermia applied? There are a couple of reasons for it to be applied in the protocol. One, because cancer cells replicate much faster than normal cells, their cell membrane structures are much different from normal cells, and they're much more sensitive to heat. This is the main reason, and when you apply high heat to cancer cells, it's a direct anti-cancer treatment. Meanwhile, the other reason of applying hyperthermia is that in local hyperthermia, when you heat the tumor location, you also increase blood circulation to that area, which increases chemotherapy drug delivery to the tumor cells also.
Okay.
And especially in whole body hyperthermia, besides its direct anti-cancer effect because of the high heat, it also is a serious immune stimulant treatment because it stimulates the bone marrow in whole body hyperthermia. This heat, especially whole body hyperthermia, is similar to causing an artificial fever in the patient.
Yeah.
And a fever is a natural response of our body also when we get sick. And which is a healing shock actually for the body,
mm-hmm.
because our body knows that somehow knows that at high heats, our immune cells function much better. They replicate much faster. And to the contrary, bacteria, also cancer cells, they are much more heat sensitive, and they aren't able to tolerate high heats.
Mm. So it's a sort of natural hygiene system.
Definitely, definitely. Mm.
Yeah.
And whole body hyperthermia and local hyperthermia, both of them are used in our protocols extensively.
Mm.
And the main reasons are, the heat is a direct anti-cancer treatment. And secondly, in local hyperthermia, by increasing blood circulation to the tumor area, you increase drug delivery, chemotherapy delivery to that area also. And in whole body hyperthermia, it's a general immune stimulant effect besides being anti-cancer. And the third treatment that we mainly use is also hyperbaric oxygen therapy.
Mm. Could I ask one more question about the hyperthermia before we move on?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So, my question would be, do you use both local and whole body hyperthermia for the same patient? And what's the basis for deciding when to use which approach?
Both of them are sometimes applied to the same patient,
okay.
Sometimes not. Mainly, we apply whole body hyperthermia where there's widespread metastatic disease in the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And also, especially if the patient has liver metastasis, we use whole body hyperthermia definitely. In local hyperthermia, almost all of our patients, receive local hyperthermia,
okay.
It's applied to the main tumor area, the primary tumor area. If they have widespread disease, we add on whole body hyperthermia too. But around 80% of the patients will generally receive both. This is also related to most of our patients being stage 4 patients that have widespread metastatic disease.
Yeah.
But if the patient only has local disease, we prefer to use only local hyperthermia.
Mm-hmm.
But based on their condition, if they have widespread disease, we apply whole body hyperthermia too.
Okay. Great, thank you. And so you mentioned hyperbaric oxygen now, so how do you use that?
We use hyperbaric oxygen therapy in all of our patients, almost all. It's based on hyperbaric oxygen is applied because cancer cells generally replicate in hypoxic environments. And
hypoxic because of this, low oxygen.
And cancer cells replicate in tissues and environments that are low in oxygen concentration. So hyperbaric oxygen therapy is applied with the aim to increase oxygen concentration in areas that are normally hypoxic. And cancer cells, they mainly hate two things. First is the heat, so you apply hypothermia. Secondly, they hate oxygen, so you apply oxygen, hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And sometimes patients ask, they say, will a normal oxygen condensator benefit me if I just breathe 100% oxygen into my body? Will this benefit me? Breathing pure oxygen won't benefit the patient. The difference of hyperbaric oxygen is the pressure. By using pressure, you increase the you dissolve oxygen in areas that normally oxygen isn't delivered. When you breathe pure oxygen, you're still using the lungs. While in hyperbaric oxygen, you're using pressure to dissolve oxygen in the body and tissues, which is a total separate way than using the lungs on its own.
I see.
It's just like when you buy Coke, after you're opening it, if you leave it open, it loses its acidity with time, because Coke, there's carbon dioxide has been dissolved in it with in a pressurized environment. When you open the bottle, you depressurize the bottle, and slowly you lose the carbon dioxide that has been normally dissolved in it, so the acidity is lost. So it's the same. Hyperbaric oxygen is the is the same kind of thing. By using pressure, you dissolve oxygen in tissues that in a way totally separate from the normal respiratory way of the lungs. And so an oxygen has a direct anti-cancer effect. And besides its anti-cancer effects, what we see is that also it increases treatment tolerance, it increases the patient's general well-being and quality of life. So that's another reason that we use hyperbaric oxygen also. In patients that receive hyperbaric oxygen, they're general well-being and treatment tolerance, also immune counts, are better in our observations.
Right. Okay, well, that's great. Well, look, I'm interested. These are three treatments you've already mentioned: the chemotherapy, the hypothermia, and the oxygen, which are all quite time-consuming. How do they interact with each other? Do you have any of them together, or do you have them one after the other? How do you actually program them?
They're received one after the other, generally. Okay. This the same day, so the patient will come in on the chemotherapy day, and early in the morning their chemotherapy will be started. And then during the day they'll also receive hypothermia and also hyperbaric oxygen the same day.
Okay.
Also the days following chemotherapy they'll also be receiving hyperthermia and hyperbaric oxygen therapy together on the same day. Because especially on the first 3 days of chemotherapy, the blood concentration of the drugs are very high.
Yes.
And we use hypothermia and hyperbaric oxygen as almost on all of those days to maximize efficacy of the chemotherapy that has been delivered.
Okay. Now, I wanted to look a little bit now. You talk about this as supported chemotherapy. And so you're actually giving people infusions of other types as well. Do you want to just go through what kind of infusions you're giving people and why?
And we firstly, what we give is, we give B vitamins, vitamin C, DMSO, and also glycolysis inhibitors, which inhibit the metabolic pathway of cancer cells. They inhibit glycolysis. These are the many things that we apply: high dose vitamin C, DMSO, B vitamins, and glycolysis inhibitors.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you want to say a little bit about each one, why you've chosen those particular things.
This is a supportive infusional care is an important part of our clinic, and it's a important point where we differ from standard approaches also. And in standard approaches, the patient will come in and they'll receive chemotherapy generally based on diagnosis once every 2 weeks or once every 3 weeks. And the oncologist will see the patient just on chemotherapy days. So sometimes the patient might not see the oncologist even on the chemotherapy day, and they'll just receive treatment and go back home. The difference of our approach is that we see our patients almost every day, the first 10 days following receiving chemotherapy. They're always with us, and on every day of these following chemotherapy, we apply supportive infusional care, which increases both the patient's well-being by minimizing chemotherapy side effects, and also by supporting the immune system. And on these supportive infusional treatments, we both apply conventional therapeutics, which minimize side effects, but also mainly apply vitamin C, DMSO, glycolysis inhibitors, and B vitamin combinations. Here, the main reason of applying these is supporting the immune system and also increasing drug delivery. And regarding DMSO, there's many publications about it increasing chemotherapy efficacy and chemotherapy delivery to the tumors. That's the main reason we apply it. We apply vitamin C at high doses almost every day. And the reason of this is there are many, there are some disagreements in applying vitamin C on the market, but we believe in its benefits in our, both on its immune supporting effects especially, and we apply it at high doses at our clinic. And the main difference in our infusions that we apply also is glycolysis inhibitors. We especially apply 2-deoxy-D-glucose, and this it inhibits glycolysis of cancer cells, which is the main way of their almost single way of generating energy. And this is inhibited with infusions. And besides that, these are the main things that we apply.
Okay. So, of course, people who are just going through standard chemotherapy without any support, they will experience neutropenia, very low blood counts, low immunity, nausea, fatigue, these kind of things. So how do your patients fare then?
Our patients are generally, you can hardly recognize that they are receiving chemotherapy generally.
Wow.
They tolerate treatment very well, nausea, vomiting. Almost none of them have complaints about that. And neutropenia is much less frequently seen in our treatment. Mm-hmm. And of course, hair loss, these kind of side effects of chemotherapy. This can be seen in patients. It's seen less compared to standard, but it is still seen. But general quality of life-wise, almost it's hard to recognize that most of our patients that they're receiving any sort of treatment.
Well, that's pretty stunning. Considering they're having a standard dose of chemotherapy, that's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Definitely, definitely. This is the power of combining both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, so when you combine and use complementary therapies effectively, it lets you be able to apply conventional more. Also, benefit from the complementary aspects also. So it's a total different approach. Meanwhile, so our chemotherapy doses are in standard dose ranges, but they aren't as high as normally the patient will receive.
Right, okay.
So because it's at the lower dose range that the guidelines permit to apply.
Yeah. And how about, I mean, one of the other things that people suffer from, of course, with the standard treatment is there's a danger of damage to organs or to nerves. Is there any protective element in the treatment you're giving?
Surprisingly, many of our patients are very surprised when they come to us. Of course, we check all of their organ functions, their kidney function, liver function especially. And we check organ functions frequently also. And following receiving treatment from us, almost all of our patients' kidney and liver function tests, they improve.
Wow.
Right. So even though they're receiving the conventional therapy,
mm-hmm.
these their kidney function and liver function almost in all of our patients improve.
Wow. Well,
and this shows the power of the complementary side of our protocol and the what can be achieved with complementary therapies, actually.
Mm. Well, I hope there's some oncologists listening to this show. I mean, the fact that all this stuff has been completely overlooked in Britain is just tragic, really, when you consider the amount of suffering we're talking about.
Definitely. It's sad. Mm.
It is. So, look, another area I know you focus on to some extent is diet, which, again, is completely ignored in Britain. Can you tell us a bit about how you see diet as coming into the picture?
Diet is very, very important in our eyes. It's one of the most important signs. And when a patient comes to us, we tell the patient, look, as the medical team will be applying every treatment that we believe is beneficial for you. And these are the things that we can do. But there are some stuff that you will have to do, which will affect treatment efficacy and outcome a lot. And for your well-being, we have to work together. And the main thing that the patient has to do is follow our diet recommendations very clearly. And whoever follows our diet more strictly and whoever takes also the medications that we recommend in a more strict way, their outcomes are much better. As a diet, we what we apply is a ketogenic diet.
Mm-hmm.
But our ketogenic diet is a bit different from the standard keto diets. It's mainly a carbohydrate restricted diet.
Okay.
While the fat intake and protein intake, we don't restrict much. It's mainly targeting as much as less carbs as possible, and in the standard keto diet, berries are permitted. We don't permit berries also at all. So mostly aiming for zero carbs and also eating fat and protein in an unrestricted manner.
Right. Okay. And so obviously you feel that's a very important support to all the actual treatments you're applying.
It's very important, just as important as any other treatment being applied.
Mm.
Because what we see is sometimes we do a follow-up scan to a patient, and then we get a good result, but it's not as good as we all expect. We say, look, the result is good, but it's not as good as we would have thought it would have been. Are you following your diet? I guess you aren't following your diet that strictly. The patient will say, oh, well, yes, these last couple of weeks, I've actually stopped doing the diet. I'm not taking my supplements as recommended, those kind of stuff.
Right.
And so whoever doesn't follow the diet are the ones that get in trouble generally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, a couple of other questions. How does your treatment apply in the case of, say, blood cancers or lymph cancers?
In lymph cancers,
yeah.
We're a medical oncology clinic. We mainly deal with solid tumors, but we also take on lymphoma patients. But
okay.
we don't take on leukemia patients.
Okay.
So lymphoma patients are treated by ourselves, but mainly we deal with solid tumors.
Okay. All right. Good to be clear. And how about the harder to treat cancers like brain cancers or pancreatic cancer?
Well, pancreatic cancer is the most aggressive of all cancers. It's one of the most deadly, with the shortest survival times expected. Meanwhile, as a clinic, we published in stage 3 and 4 pancreatic cancer patients. We published a case series around 2.5-3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a clinic that has published the longest survival time ever published worldwide. And our pancreatic cancer outcomes are the best worldwide based on scientific publication. We've published in end of 2015, beginning of 2016. In our publication, we had published about 33 stage 3 and 4 patients that had received treatment at our clinic. And in this kind of patient group, based on information and publications and guidelines, the survival time expected is generally 6 to 11 months.
Mm-hmm.
In our publication of 33 patients, the median survival time was 18.4 months, and 54% of those patients were still alive.
Okay.
So the survival time was much, much higher than ever expected, and more than half of the patients were still alive at that time.
Yeah.
We'll be publishing an updated report also about those patients. We'll be publishing this year.
Okay.
And the median survival time is much longer than ever heard of. And brain cancers, we have GBM patients that are being treated at our clinic. Generally, our outcomes are better than standard, and also we have outstanding results. But when we say pancreatic cancer, we're the best worldwide based on our publication.
Right. Okay. Well, that's impressive. All right. So for us in the UK, Istanbul is quite a long way to go for treatment. I know that. I cycled there once. I went there on my bike, so I know it's a long way. And for someone who's not used to travelling to such places, it might seem rather intimidating to go there. They may be worried about their support after treatment when they come back. Can you tell us about the things that are in place for a patient who's thinking of coming to you from the UK?
Well, UK, for an international patient coming to our clinic, UK is one of the best places for us because of a couple of reasons. The main reason is it's actually international flight time-wise. It's just a four-hour flight.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many, many, many flights every day. And we, because of this, we have many patients from the United Kingdom and Ireland. We, as a clinic, we have patients from the United States, from China, from Australia also. When in these world countries, we generally prefer patients to come to us from Europe, because then they can fly back and forth much more easier.
Right.
And because of this travel time, also most European patients are also choosing to come to our clinic. It's a harder decision for United States patient to come to us, or an Australian patient to come to us, because it's a quite serious travel time.
Mm-hmm.
And also our for a patient that comes to us, what can they expect when they decide coming to us? They come to us, they generally, based on their diagnosis, some of the patients will stay 10 days and go back home for 10 days, and they'll come back and forth like that. Some of them will come, they'll stay 3 days, go back home for 10 days, and then come again.
Mm-hmm.
And while they're in Istanbul, every day they will be seen by ourselves, by myself and my team, and they'll receive treatment at our clinic. We're an outpatient clinic. Meanwhile, even though we're an outpatient clinic, sometimes rightfully patients ask, they say, well, if something occurs at midnight or while the clinic's closed on Sunday, what am I going to do? No problem. We have agreements with nearby hospitals just close by to our clinic where our patients stay.
Okay.
And patients are able to go to the emergency room at any time.
Okay.
They feel the need for treatment, and always my phone and my staff's phone are always open, so they're always able to reach us.
Okay.
And so even though we're an outpatient clinic, we whenever necessary, we're able to deliver necessary treatment at a 24-hour, 7 days a week basis. And when they're back in the UK, what happens? Of course, patients' important part of time is also spent back at home. While they're back at home, they're followed up by our team is still continued, especially by myself. They are supplied with almost all medications that they will need back in the UK. Nausea medications, diarrhea medications, supplements, everything that they'll be using is supplied by ourselves. And they're also given recommendations about when to have blood counts done and what else that they can receive. Let's say we arrange and recommend for them to receive hyperbaric oxygen. So we collaborate with some healthcare practitioners in the UK about this also.
Okay.
But mainly, when a patient decides receiving treatment from us, when they're in Istanbul, they receive 24/7 care by ourselves whenever necessary. Even though we're not patient clinic, at all times they're able to receive any treatment that might be necessary for them. While they're back at home, they're supplied with medications by ourselves, and also we collaborate with some healthcare practitioners in the UK. Also, my phone and our staff's phone is always open, so our communication and follow-up still continues when they're back at home.
Okay, and do patients need to organize their own accommodation? Is there a help with that at all?
When a patient applies to us, before coming to us, our team gives them accommodation recommendations, and whoever wants help, we organize their accommodation for them.
Great.
Our clinic is placed in an area just like, let's say in London, there's Harley Street where all the clinics are placed, and there are many hotels nearby also.
Right.
The place we're in, Istanbul, is just like Harley Street. Mm-hmm. There are many hospitals and private clinics in our area, and also good quality hotels.
Mm-hmm.
So we work with many of these hotels, and also these are all walking distance, 3 minutes, 5 minutes walking distances from our clinic.
Okay.
So most of our patients stay in these hotels, and while they're staying in the hotels, at every day of the every hour of the day, our drivers, they pick the patients up from the hotels, bring them to the clinic for patients that don't want to or won't be able to walk. And so that kind of support is also given, and whoever wants, accommodation is organized by our staff before coming to us.
Right, okay, that's great. And out of interest, have you had any cooperation with oncologists in the UK?
Unfortunately, not. Unfortunately, not. Mm. But slowly, I believe some oncologists are going to want to collaborate, because we have a serious number of patients from the UK currently, and these patients that we're treating, the treatment that they're receiving is actually not out of guidelines. What they're receiving is the best kind of treatment that they can receive, because it, it combines the conventional treatment together with the complementary side. Mm. Initially, when the patient informs the oncologist, they get a serious backlash, but and some of these oncologists, they request letters from me regarding the treatment and the protocol that they're receiving, also scan results and stuff, which I supply the patients with. And after the oncologist is more informed about what we're doing, actually, mm-hmm. some of them get back to the patient with positive comments.
Okay.
Because what we're offering is a much better and safer package to the patient. It's just like the example that I give is, I'll explain that also. Once a person is diagnosed with cancer, especially if they're diagnosed with metastatic stage 3 and 4 cancer, it's just like being in a vessel that's going to have an accident.
Right.
Any of us can get this diagnosis. Maybe I'll get it, or one of my loved ones. Any of us can get it. And once this diagnosis is given, it's just like being in a vessel that's going to have an accident. Now, if a person is in a... now, the vessel is taking the person from one point to another point. The vessel, we aren't saying for the vessel to be changed. The vessel there is, we see the main transport vehicle as chemotherapy is important in our eyes. But we're saying, let's change the way we apply this chemotherapy. Let's use this vehicle, but let's change the way we apply it. Meanwhile, the other thing that we say is, now if a person is in this vehicle, they're going to have an accident. If when we go to a car gallery, we're going to buy a car, in the same car, there's a more base model of the car and also a more fuller package of the car that has much more airbags, better steel, better security options. If a person is in a car that has more quality steel, more airbags, more security options, their survival chance is much higher. Mm. So what we're saying is, okay, we got the disease, we're in this car, but let our car be such a car that gives us a better chance to get by if we have an accident. Mm. So the complementary side of our protocol is the airbags, and that the more higher number of airbags in that car. Mm. And the chemotherapy that we use, because the way we apply it is different, it's a better quality steel. So again, we're in a vessel, but we're in a better vessel. Right. So we have a better chance to get by.
Mm. Okay, very good, very clear. Okay, well, look, on that note, we're going to end it. I'm afraid we're out of time. But, thank you very much for sharing details of, the really interesting, the exciting developments of chemothermia. I hope that maybe we'll be able to check in again another year or two and see where things have got to by then.
Okay. it was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
Have a nice day, and see you soon, hopefully.
Well, I think Dr. Slocum put the case for integration very powerfully, and their results speak for themselves. There's actually some bonus material for today's show. Dr. Slocum described two amazing cases that we weren't able to include in the show. But if you search for the Yes to Life show on the internet, you'll arrive on the Listen on Demand show page of UK Health Radio, where you'll find the extra material. Indeed, you may already be listening from this page. It's well worth a listen. You can find links to material related to this interview on the Yes to Life website. Just go to yestolife.org.uk and click the show logo on the homepage. The next event in the Yes to Life calendar is a talk by nutritionist Kirsten Chick on nutrition, stress and immunity. It's at 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday the 23rd of May at the Old Ship Hotel in Brighton. For full details of the event and to book, go to yestolife.org.uk and choose events from the left-hand menu bar. Also, of course, if you want to get a taster of the Brighton event, you can listen to my interview with Kirsten Chick on the Yes to Life show a couple of weeks ago. Again, go to yestolife.org.uk, click the Yes to Life show logo on the homepage, and then scroll down until you find the show from the week before last. Do join me again at the same times next week for another Yes to Life show. Goodbye.